thanks so much for joining us on Cranford Radio. My name is Bernie Wagenblast. Today's topic is one that you would probably think is not really well-suited to talk about in an audio format. We're going to be talking about photography and a Cranford photographer by the name of Frank Little. Frank, first of all, welcome to Cranford Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Like I say, we're going to be talking about a very visual subject, and people are going to have to use their imagination, but they do say that radio is the theater of the mind, so perhaps we can paint some pictures about your photography for the folks who are listening to us today.
That would be good.
For those who aren't familiar with Frank, Frank is a photographer. I think probably it's safe to say you are best known for some of your photography involving New York City's skyline, the Statue of Liberty, the sun and the moon, and how all of that all plays together. How would you describe yourself?
Yeah, I'm primarily a cityscape photography. Sometimes I dabble into landscape. I've always had a fascination with it. What got me back into photography, I should say, was when my daughter was born. And of course, I was taking like a million pictures of her as she was growing up. And as she got older, there was a certain point where she was out with friends or doing things, and I wasn't always around her to take pictures and things like that. And that started to kind of fade off a little bit. Plus, when they're like little kids, easy to take pictures of. When they get older, they're like, not so much. Okay, Dad, leave me alone.
Yep.
Enough pictures. So I think I unconsciously used that as a transition to follow my other passion, photography, besides portrait. That was landscape, cityscape. I always had a fascination. From time to time, I would do it, but just dabbling.
Mm-hmm.
So about 6.5 years ago, I was a member. I am still a member of a group called New Jersey Photographers. It's a Facebook group. They had announced that they were running a free workshop down at Liberty State Park. So I went down there, and we were going to shoot the New York skyline at dusk and at night. And it was basically a nighttime photography workshop. And I loved it. From that point on, I was hooked. I wanted to go back more and learn more. So from one of the leaders down who ran the workshop, I took a couple of workshops with her. She actually eventually became a friend of mine. I did a couple of workshops, and then I just started going out a couple times a week by myself with the little that I had learned and started to try things out. Did a lot of experimenting. Probably was good that I experimented by myself because I made a lot of mistakes. But that was good because I could come home now that everything's on a computer and you're not sending it out a lab to be developed. I could see what I was doing right, what I was doing wrong. I started to teach myself. And again, from guidance from friends and from YouTube videos and from books that I was reading about how to process. And I developed my own style. And I think that was important. Like the first year and a half, I really worked on my own. I had influence, but I also kind of followed my own instinct on how I wanted things to look. I think it paid off for me in that sense because a lot of people say I have a distinct style,
mm-hmm.
which is, I guess as a photographer, that's something you really want your work to stand out.
Mm-hmm.
And I still do. And it hasn't changed. I've become a better photographer. I process my pictures better, but I still have that style that makes that picture my own. And I have a lot of people who looked at my picture and said, even before I looked at your watermark, I knew it was your shot. And for me, that's, you know, I'm doing something right. That's how I got my start. Eventually, you know, after initially the time kind of working on my own, I started talking with other photographers. We would start going to different places to shoot. We would share information between us and other photographers. And I kind of expanded. I expanded not shooting cityscapes, but going shooting lighthouses or landscape. I was thinking about this before. I'll take a travel camera with me on vacation, not my heavy duty equipment. Yeah. Something that's 2 pounds, not 8 or 9 pounds. If I can, I will actually shoot from different locations that I travel from.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get in touch with other photographers in the area or through groups that I belong to on Facebook and saying, hey, I'm going to be up in Toronto. Can anybody give me some guidance about where I should shoot? You know, I had one photographer said, hey, I live in Toronto. Why don't we go out and shoot?
You and I are close to the same age. I'm a few years older than you, but I remember as a kid with my Kodak Instamatic going around taking pictures for a brief time when I was 9 or 10 years old. I said, oh, I'm going to make some postcards. And I would take pictures of different businesses, which actually has been kind of nice to look back on some of those pictures of places that no longer exist.
Right.
As a kid, did you have your Brownie or your Kodak Instamatic?
Yes, both. I think it was a Brownie. It was a camera that had an external flash, I think. It was like the round dish on top of the body of the camera. Of course, those were used flash bulbs, which one used, and then it was you injected it and put a new one in. I had that. I had the Instamatic, which I loved. I had the Polaroid Swinger, black and white.
Only $19.95.
Oh, that's right.
That's from the jingle.
I forgot. Only $19.95. I spent some time in Europe, and I brought the Polaroid Swinger. And I remember, I don't know where the pictures are, but I ended up taking a lot of black and white pictures.
Yeah, and one of the things about those Polaroid cameras that kind of relates to today's age was that was almost instant feedback on your photo. You know, you'd have to wait for it to develop on the paper, but within a couple of minutes, you had an idea of what your photo looked like. Right. Whereas, you know, when you took it on film, you'd have to send it off to the developer unless you were brave enough to try to develop it in your own black room. I'm curious, that kind of instant feedback that you get now with digital photography and the fact that you don't have to worry about, well, you know, I've got so much film here that I'm using up. Does that change the whole calculus of when you're taking photos of, okay, I know that this is a good shot and maybe I could just improve this a little bit right now by switching this around a bit?
Yes. Oh, definitely. As I said in another interview I did, I end up taking a moonrise, a sunrise, whatever I'm taking. I end up taking hundreds of shots. I mean, and some outings, like if I'm out chasing a lightning storm, I'll go through like 1,000 shots to try to catch it. And within maybe a 2 or 3 hour session. Mm-hmm. So yes, it does change the calculus, because then I can sit down on the computer and I can go through and really cherry pick the best shots and have a better chance of getting the shot that I want. So it does change the calculus of it, because I wouldn't be doing this. If this was a film, I'd be broke.
I can certainly appreciate that. I'm curious, you talked about you have your travel camera. Most of us who are not professional photographers now use our smartphones to take pictures, and they produce remarkably good shots with those. Do you use a smartphone at all for informal pictures?
Yes. Oh, yeah. There's an old photography adage. The best camera that you have is the one that's with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very true. So the nice thing about a smartphone is it's basically always with us. So I can always take the shot. I mean, anything from mundane, I'm at Costco and I see something that I like, so I'll take a picture of it so I can go home and show it to, you know, my wife or family and say, you know, do we need this? Is this something, you know, to snapping a picture of my daughter or my daughter and her friends or something with the family. And it's there. It's there. It's quick. It takes a great shot. The other cameras I have are great, but they're bigger, they're bulkier, and it takes more time. Where here you reach in your pocket and you got the shot. And that includes video too. Mm-hmm. It's just changed the whole dynamic of it. You talk about video, sometimes if I'm shooting something, let's say like a fireworks display over New York City, I'll actually mount my camera in the hot shoe, I'll mount my phone onto the top of the camera and shoot video of what I'm shooting.
Mm-hmm. For folks who aren't too familiar with your work, is it safe for me to say that a lot of the photos that you're most well known for are taken from the New Jersey side of the Hudson River, looking toward New York City, whether it's the Statue of Liberty or the cityscape?
I would say that's safe to say. The majority of stuff is from the Jersey side, but I have made it a point to shoot more from New York. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, I said, you know what? Most of it's just from one side, and I would really like to get it the city from the other side. It's a different view, a different dynamic. Oh, majority New Jersey, but more and more stuff from the New York side is creeping in. And once in a blue moon, I'll go in the city. If there's something, if it's just a nice day or something's happening, I'll go and do street photography. That's mm-hmm. another love of mine, just going in and snapping shots kind of on the run. And I've got some really interesting, great shots over the years. That's a whole different ballgame.
One of the things that just recently happened, it happened in May, and I believe it will happen again in July, is something called Manhattan Henge, which is sort of a takeoff on Stonehenge. And for those who aren't familiar with it, it's the two times a year where the sun will rise or set in line with the street grid of Manhattan. So you get the sun right between the buildings when you're looking crosstown on one of the streets. Have you taken advantage of that event anytime?
It's funny you mentioned that, because I was just talking to a friend about that yesterday. There was a Manhattan Henge that happened the night before last, I think, because last night, 2 nights ago, it got clouded. Mm-hmm. So it was the first night, and I saw the pictures. People got phenomenal pictures. I haven't done it yet, and the reason why I'm hesitant to do it is it's very, very crowded. So I'm hearing that if you want to get a good spot, there's a bridge walkway on the other side of Manhattan. If you want to get on that, you've got to be there like midday.
Wow.
you're standing there for 8 hours. That's the one thing that would be holding me back.
Sort of like those who want to be in Times Square on New Year's Eve. You have to get there early to get a good spot.
Would never do it. I'd rather just watch it on TV. So that said, within our group or subset of photographers who chase basically the same thing I'm chasing, celestial events, moonrises, sunrises, moonsets, the whole bit, Milky Ways. Sometimes there's a lot of people that have figured out the same lineup, and you'll have, 10, 20, sometimes more, trying to get the same event. You go, oh my God, that's, how are there so many photographers who do that? Yeah, it's a lot of people have that hobby. So that's good because people are enjoying that, but it's challenging because now you're shooting the same thing that everybody else is. And that's where, when we were talking before, where the scouting comes in. Like tonight, I'm going to go out and I'm going to look at different areas of New Jersey to see if I can get a different view of New York City. A lot of times I'll go out and there'll be other photographers there, but sometimes I go out and there's nobody there and you're the only one who's there. You peg the location, you peg the shot. We have a joke. You go out to a location, you're the only one there. That's good news and bad news. The good news is that you're the only one there. The bad news is you're the only one there, and maybe you screwed the lineup up. And you won't know until you see the moon rise and realize, I pegged it. I use tools. I mean, everything I do is not just guesswork. Scout locations, that takes time and knowledge. I'm scouring maps to look for good shots, including taking into consideration elevations. Mm-hmm. But I use planning tools to actually help me line up these celestial events. So if I want a moonrise on a given night, I'll use tools like one's called the photographer's ephemeris. And that helps me get the timing and the alignment up. So none of this happens by accident. It's very, very planned and calculated. And there's a lot that goes into it. You do moonrise, you have to make sure you get there in time, have enough time, allow for traffic, allow for enough time to set up, to double check your coordinates, to make sure you're actually in the right place at the right time. Occasionally I've made a mistake in planning something out, but if I get there early enough, I can say, oh, I made a mistake and I need to move a block to the left or a block to the right.
We're going to have a link on the show notes for this episode that will lead people to your photography. So this will not all be theater of the imagination. What started out as, I guess, kind of a hobby for you has now brought you some renown. Tell us a little bit about some of the things where your photography has been noticed.
Well, I found out through somebody who follows my photography on Facebook that I was being featured in the Empire State Building. I believe it's on the 86th floor of the observation deck. And they have, through the different levels that you can go on, they have different things that you can look, like a self-guided tour of the history of the Empire State Building. So they have some floor-to-ceiling displays. I think one on the 80th floor and one on the 86th floor, where the observation deck is one of them. And he told me that my picture, one of my pictures of the Empire State Building, it was a moonrise next to the Empire State Building, was being featured on one of the floor-to-ceiling displays. With, in all fairness, I was being rotated through with some other photographers too. But he said it was great. He goes, you have a very distinctive style. And I knew it was yours. I saw the picture. And he said, I stuck around for another cycle so I could see it again. And I saw your name on it. And I said, that's great. It ended up there because that year is actually a finalist for the Empire State Building. They have a Empire State Building photography contest every year. And that year as a finalist, and they use that picture now for one of their displays. That same picture, actually, if you go to the Empire State Building website, is actually one of the pictures featured on their website. As a side note, a couple of years back, I actually took second place in the Empire State Building contest. It was the first year I had entered. That was great. I mean, I got a lot of publicity. I was in a lot of marketing materials. I found out accidentally, actually, I was looking for something else on the internet. And I found out that my winning shot was actually featured as the cover of one of their corporate reports.
Oh, cool.
I mean, again, completely accidental. A filmmaker from Poland named Daniel got in touch with me a couple of years ago. He wanted to do a short documentary, the work I do. He sent me samples of his work, and he does phenomenal work. So when he came in a couple of months later into New York, we spent a couple of days, and he basically followed me around and shot me as I worked. By that January, he had the completed film. It was about 6 minutes long.
Wow.
And he ended up entering it in film festivals for probably a good, at least a year. And he entered in about 50 film festivals around the world. And this is when we were in lockdown. So they were all virtual. And he actually picked up 8 awards along the way. It was great. The film was phenomenal. He got a lot of deserved recognition for his work. He does phenomenal work. And I got recognition for being the subject of his film.
How cool is that? Do you sell any of your photos? Obviously, they are beautiful, but do you market them?
Yeah. Well, I sell them through my Facebook page. So people see something they like, they inquire about it. I send them my price list, and then sometimes they buy. Probably the smallest I would sell would be an 8x12. And the largest that I've sold so far is, I want to say a 40x60.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a big wall piece. Yeah, I'm flattering people do. And then a lot of times they get it mounted and framed. And then they usually send me a picture of what it looks like on their wall.
Oh, cool. How wonderful is that?
It's pretty phenomenal. Yeah.
Well, again, we have links on the show notes so folks can not only go to appreciate your photography, but if they're so inclined, actually purchase one or more of your photos.
Thank you.
We have been talking with Frank Little from Cranford. He is a photographer. And again, I would encourage you to certainly click on the links in the show notes to see what we have been talking about. Frank, thanks so much for taking the time out to chat with me today.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.